If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S. Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast and are also awkwardly looking at each other during. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
It's fun to look at each other during because sometimes I can see a laugh that I would never have known happened.
How I feel about your sense of humor up until now has been mostly a mystery.
Yeah. I record with you multiple times a week, and I always walk away from it wondering, what's in it for Adam? we just got back from Max FunCon, which was a total hoot.
Yeah, met tons
a lot
of fun.
Of great friends of DeSoto up there.
Yeah.
And I think we were planning on recording earlier than this, but we had to record a looking at each other during, and you happened to already have tickets to LA, so
yeah,
it worked out. We didn't actually burn any money that we don't have to burn for this board game.
We just rolled it into a business trip.
Yeah.
I think I've been hungover for 3 days straight.
Uh-huh.
Just that low-level... nothing feels right or 100% feeling.
Sure. Yeah. And
I'm not in pain. I just feel off.
Right. Your body is not happy with what you've been doing to it.
My body frequently is a wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is like a broken amusement park that's just spraying sewer water everywhere.
And there's the old groundskeeper who's dressing up like a goblin and right. Scaring the villagers.
Right. Yeah. That's my penis.
He would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't you damn kids.
Uh-huh. What was your favorite part of Max FunCon?
Oh, man. We get to see Everything's Coming Up Simpsons
right.
Live, which was really fun. It's like a show on the network that I think has a lot in common with ours in terms of format, but it's about a comedy show, so mm-hmm. It's like a totally different trick. Like,
yeah.
Like watching them do material on stuff that's already really funny and like make it its own funny show was really fun.
Yeah, it sure sounds more difficult to make a joke about another joke
yeah.
than it is to make fun about something quote-unquote serious.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed the Beef and Dairy Network live show.
Yeah, I have to admit that was my first time listening to or seeing the show. I'd only heard by reputation about how funny it was.
Yeah.
Legit funny. That
very,
was good.
Very funny show. I think that...
Can you imagine doing a show like that as jet-lagged as they were? They talked about being awake for like 30 hours or something.
Yeah.
That would be terrifying.
I will not be performing any Greatest Gen live shows in the condition that they were in.
Yeah, you'd never know it, though.
Yeah, they were really great. There were a couple of fun things that I was sad to miss because we were making a very special bonus episode of Friendly Fire on Saturday.
Right.
But that should be coming out soon, and I'm pretty excited about that. One of the things we missed was Bubble, which is Jordan Morris's new scripted comedy show on Max Fun.
Yeah. Everyone I talked to about it said they loved it.
Yeah.
So by its reputation, I think it's going to go big.
Rob Schulte, the producer of Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire, got to sit in for that, and he said he thinks it might be like one of the best new shows of 2018.
That guy knows what he's talking about, because he said the same thing about Friendly Fire.
Yeah. He had nothing to gain from that at all.
and judging from those two predictions, he's batting 50%.
It was a different Max FunCon this year. Our wives came up with us.
Yeah.
That was a new experience. And we've like performed at Max FunCon before, but I think that our position as like people who have a show on a network has sort of matured. It like I think that the Max FunCon that we performed live at, we were still like, ha, we're getting away with something. I can't believe that they're letting us on their network. And
They're like, would you help empty these garbages?
Yeah. It's come to feel more like normal. Like we're members of the family. Like we're not the new kids on the block.
Yeah.
So it was fun to go in that context.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest benefit to that is going into a shared space before everyone else and grabbing the first couple of drinks. Like hopping a non-existent line was a very nice ability to have.
Well, that's just because we're good friends with Chris Bowman, and
he's
kind of the guy making the decision about whether it's okay for us to be there or not.
Man, Chris Bowman kept me on the right side of fucked up most of the weekend.
You went pretty hard this weekend. Like on Friday, you woke up at 4:30 a.m. to catch a flight to L.A. We drove for a few hours up the mountain, and you just like tore into Max FunCon with a ferocity that I found really impressive.
I wouldn't have expected it to be the case because, like, as soon as we got to Lake Arrowhead, I was like looking at my watch, like, can I make it to midnight? Will my body let me?
Yeah.
And there's like just an energy to the thing that I was able to tap into, which was like, I don't want this fun thing to stop.
Yeah.
I am willing to pay the price. And I paid it over and over again. Like I consistently got maybe 5 hours of sleep night after night. And
it
always felt worth it because I think the most fun conversations I had while I was there were the ones that happened between 1 and 1:30.
Yeah.
Like when things were really off the rails and zany and fun.
It's such a great environment too, because it's like attendees and people teaching classes and performers are all just kind of like intermingling. And it's not...
There's not a caste system there.
Right. I mean, the only people with sky priority are us, and it's just because we're friends with Chris Bowman.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, like sitting down for lunch and having, you know, Chuck Bryant and also just some people who are attending the shows, you know, is pretty wild and pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, I say all this not as a compensated endorser. I paid my own way to get to Max FunCon, and I always do. Like, we're saying this because we truly love the event. And if you thought about going and thought for some reason it might not be for you, I would definitely consider it. It is something I definitely look forward to every year. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. I was also, like, they run such a professional operation, and they bring in so many amazing performers and things. Like, I was thinking about, like, the planning that we were doing for trying to make Greatest Gen Con, like, a event where we brought people to us rather than the other way around. And I don't think we could ever get close to that level of awesome.
I'm friends with some event producers in Seattle, one of which I mentioned Max FunCon 2, and mentioned that Eric Westra was responsible for its production and got, like, the one thing you always want to hear when you drop someone's name is holy shit. And that was the reaction. Like, Eric Westra's best in the biz status at this stuff.
And he's got like a rep.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. It's nice to be in such good hands.
It is very clear why that is the case. Like, that guy runs a tight ship and is really committed to, like, everybody getting the most out of it.
Yeah.
In a cool way.
Yeah.
Well, should we stop talking about how much fun we just had? And
the sooner we can end this episode, the sooner I can stop looking at you.
That is the truth.
That's a hell of a light at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah. I wouldn't wish on anybody what you're suffering through right now.
Yeah.
This board game is a real bitch. It's a real fucker.
I think I just stepped on your dog's face on accident. Sorry, Dar. That might be the best feeling to carry into Season 2, Episode 18, Profit and Loss.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
That is just a world-class transition, Adam. World-class transition. The episode opens with some pretty fun miniature effects, like a Cardassian ship in distress that is pretty beat up. It's not the Galore-class battlecruiser that we typically see. It seems like maybe a new model even, which is not always the case with ships. Like, there's a lot of, like, oh, we put different Nernies and Greeblies on a model we already had and said this is like a Tarkellian freighter.
It definitely looked related, like,
yeah,
like a calf to a cow.
Right. It's in the Cardassian architecture tradition.
Yeah.
And it's real beat up. It's all sparks flying off it and wharf lightning all over the place. And
I liked seeing the handoff, like the handoff between tractor beams. Like you could see a process happen there.
Yeah. That's one of those things that just kind of makes the station feel like a real place. Like just having details like that worked out.
Yeah.
And they bring this ship in and off step a bunch of civilian Cardassians, a kind of people we don't see that often.
Yeah, some plunging neckline Cardassians specifically, right?
Yeah, that is an upsettingly scaly decolletage.
I don't think it should come as a surprise to anyone, like how you and I feel about how one should dress as they travel, specifically when they air travel commercially.
Right.
You don't see too many people wear the full-on gown on an airplane, and yet the case is made that these guys have come via transit. Like,
right.
So her dress choice seemed really odd to me.
Yeah, the floor-length gown, and she's piloting this shuttle.
Yeah.
Like, I would want a little bit more range of motion, I think, if I was going
to
be...
I'm going to guess that there is no pedal situation, like, to affect yaw on that ship. Like, I don't think she's using her feet to control anything.
Yeah.
You don't want to get tangled up in that dress.
We've taken a couple of stabs at the Star Trek Bridge Crew game by now, and I don't know if we will have unveiled anything about that yet. But yeah, it's very... It's very reassuring that you don't have to do anything with your feet when you're piloting a starship.
Yeah, no shit.
It's complicated enough, man.
This woman, Natima, is objectively beautiful. Like, she's scaled up as much as any other Cardassian, but like...
Her beauty shines right through that loaf.
Yeah, yeah. She's got some great charisma. She's accompanied by two of her students. This is Rekkalin and Hoag.
You pointed out that Hoag is an actor we've seen before on Star Trek.
Hoag, if you just look through the scales, you will realize that he played Govel, the dopey Borg from Descent Part 2.
Yeah, he's got a real, like, dopey alien face, and they were just like, hey, like, this is also a dope.
He's been dope typecast.
A little bit of a stretch to imagine that this dopey guy is the leader of a political movement.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the type of guy who could wire together an improvised explosive.
Yeah, like the Che Guevara version of his shirt is just like, it just looks like nothing because his face has too few features to like to like come out as a face if you posterize it like that.
Oh man, now I have in my head the Che shirt that is Govel.
Oh man.
And just like resist on the bottom.
That's the only kind of merch we put in the Max Fun store ever again. It was like, we had so much fun getting criticized for our first Che shirt.
Yeah. We're just really leaning into failure.
Yeah. Our first friendly fire shirt was Erica from Red Dawn as Che.
Yeah.
And then Rekkelin is also kind of a that lady.
Yeah, who I recognized by voice alone. Yeah. Deep under all those scales is Susan, George's lady friend from Seinfeld.
Lily?
No, Susan.
No, it's Lily.
I think I know my own name.
I was sad that Rekkelin never caught anybody eating a chocolate eclair out of the garbage.
Attitudinally, you can see a lot of Susan and Rekkelin in this episode.
They've already tried to kill us once. They're sure to try again.
Her voice is really distinctive, and yeah. I don't know if I ever like thought about her voice when she was playing Susan, because I guess maybe everybody on Seinfeld has a very distinctive voice, so maybe it kind of seems somewhat normal, but...
And I don't know if it's just due to repetition that, like, I've seen so much Seinfeld so repeatedly that, like, she may have a totally unremarkable voice in most ways outside of how often I've seen all the episodes she's in.
These two characters I was convinced were, like, going to be lineless extras in this first scene because they come off the ship and they just keep cutting to this awkward two-shot of them, like, observing as Commander Sisko goes like, yeah, Chief O'Brien will fix up your ship.
The direction to Hoag must have been like, can you give me a little more of that Goval stink that we've come to admire out of you?
Like, the sense memory I want is like what it felt like to go poop as Goval.
What did it feel like when Lore really ripped into you in front of the rest of the group that one time? You're right, because they do a lot of cutaways in this scene, and he's not inspiring a lot of confidence.
No.
Especially when we're told to believe that he is, like, a heavy.
Yeah, like, I don't... like, the student movement at Cardassian Cal Berkeley lining up behind this guy is a little bit implausible.
Yeah.
We also, before...
He looks like the guy who can't work the megaphone during the demonstration, and it's, like, totally squeaky and feedbacky.
Like, he's telling people to throw themselves on the cogs and levers of the machinery of capitalism, but the machinery of capitalism in the megaphone is fighting back. We also get a scene in the bar with Bashir and Garrick. Is it in the bar or is it in the Replimat?
I don't know. Not shot wide is the problem.
They're hanging out in a public space somewhere promenade adjacent.
It seems like their regular hang is still happening.
Yeah. I don't know if I would like keep a lunch date, a standing lunch date with somebody that spends their time arguing pro-fascism stuff. Like this.
It really shows you how few friends Bashir has, if that's the case.
I wonder if it's just such a curiosity for somebody that lives in the Federation. Like, really? You're pro-fascism. Unbelievable.
Good job by Bashir, at least, to have all these hangs in a public space. Like, you definitely don't want to go to a second location with Garrick.
No, you never go to a second location with a disgraced Cardassian spy.
Right.
Yeah, they do the fun, like, Garrick is speaking in riddles thing a little bit, and, you know, am I an outcast? Am I a spy? I'm an outcast spy.
¿Por qué no los dos?
I won't admit to either thing. And that's all going on when Quark and Odo have a little interaction at the bar. And Odo comes in announcing that he's caught wind that Quark is in possession of an illegal miniature cloaking device. And Quark is kind of in the process of denying or explaining this away when Natima and gang come down the promenade, and he spots her and he runs out, and it's like, it's one of those, you know, one of those TV tropes where he's like, I'm so glad to see you, and she just smacks him in the face.
Yeah. And it's blocked really fun, too, because like it makes it easier for her to do the stunt because of how it's shot. Like, you sometimes you get slap scenes or punch scenes that are shot in profile.
Yeah.
And that's a lot harder to pull off unless you're a professional. But what it does by rotating that center line a little bit, you make it so that you don't really have to come close to slapping him to sell the effect.
Yeah, so like we're looking at the back of Quark's head and she's coming toward him and she might be like 6 feet away from him when she throws that swing.
Yeah, there's some lens compression there too that makes them look closer.
Yeah, and Quark declares to Odo that this is the happiest day of his life as he rubs his injured nose.
Yeah, which really discloses the way their relationship got physical and the way Quark kind of likes that.
That's some kinky shit, Quark.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that about him.
There is a lot of touching between them through the ep, and like the canonical pleasure center for the Ferengi is the ears, and you get a lot of like circling of his ears with her hands.
Yeah, and he always lets a little sigh go as she does it.
And later on, you see the equivalent for the Cardassian, which is the sensitivity of those scales. When he touches her shoulders, it that is a definite pleasure center for her.
A little bit of an erogenous zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if she just got a single scale somewhere else. Like, is that does she have a scaly man in a canoe?
I always have a tough time finding that one scale.
I know.
I'm not positive it's really there. I mean, I've heard it's great.
People are saying all the time how great it is. and I just pretend like I know.
So that's our cold
open.
Do you
feel like it's hard for Quark to give oral because of his ears?
Ooh. But maybe it's like as much good for him as it is for the lady because there's some like contact.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was like obsessed with imagining in this was what comes out if a Ferengi and a Cardassian have a baby.
Yeah.
Like how, like that's two weird loafs that don't necessarily taste great together.
No. No, like you gotta wonder what the dominant genetic...
Is it going to just be like an orange Cardassian, or is it going to be a gray Ferengi with scales, or is it going to be like...
You get some scaly ears?
What's the midpoint between those two colors even? Beige?
Burnt umber?
We come back from the title sequence, and Quark is trying to make nice with Natima, and this is like just continuing the same action. It's not like days later. It's he's like running down the promenade going like, let me give you a drink, and he convinces her and her students to join him in the bar. She's saying that she's like a professor of political ethics, and the two students are like the leaders of a movement to remove political power from the Cardassian military. Like the military is in charge of everything on Cardassia, and they're looking to change the way that works.
Neither of these students are hot for Cardassian teacher, though, which I thought was an interesting choice, right? Her attractiveness is only made clear through Quark's perspective.
Yeah.
And for as powerful of a person as she is in her field of study, like, you never get the sense that Rekkalin and Hoag, you know, like, we see this trope all the time, the celebrity professor that everyone just fawns over.
Right.
There is no fawning about her except from Quark.
Yeah, like, they fawn in a pretty, like, chaste
In a professional way.
Yeah. And, but he is like...
There's no talk of her Fields Medal, for example.
Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, it's kind of playing with the trope of the like older scientist and the younger charge that he, because it's almost always a he, brings with him.
Yeah.
In TNG did like hit that pinata like 18 times.
Yeah.
But it's not quite that in this episode. And I felt like this episode really felt like the directing and the writing and stuff really felt like distinct in a way that...
I agree.
I was like, oh, this show is like kind of figuring itself out right now.
there's a oneer that happens up front that is like very sophisticated. Like there's a turn around a corner,
yeah,
and maybe a half a page of dialogue and like some moves, right?
Yeah, this is because the scene when Odo is confronting Quark about the,
yeah,
and the camera never cuts. It's like, and there's 30 extras in the scene. There's a lot of like movement and
handoffs too, right? Like there are things being handed to other people, and it's one thing to shoot a oneer where it's just dialogue and two people sitting at a table, like, yeah, going back and forth, but it is so quite another for Odo to come from the promenade and turn the corner into a totally different like so much of it is about lighting, right?
Right.
And keeping that lighting continuity throughout is really difficult, especially in two totally separate locations.
Yeah, when you're shooting something like this, you really have to think carefully about when you're going to have a long take like this, because it is challenging for every member of the crew. Like, I'm assuming that was a Steadicam shot, right? Or do you think it was on a dolly?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been curved dolly track around the bulkhead that Odo walks around.
I mean, either way, like, if you're operating Steadicam, it's fucking exhausting to operate it, like, for long stretches. If you're operating a dolly, that's like, there's a grip that has to get all of the moves timed perfectly. The actors have to be timed perfectly. Like, they have to be doing all of their little actions the same way in each take.
Yeah.
So that it all, like, you know, it's a lot of people that need to be kind of, it's like playing music, you know, like all of the parts need to be working together. And
like that, I don't know how long ago that episode was, but you pointed out a background actor as your Shimoda, like one background actor fed another background actor.
Yeah.
Try to imagine a choice being made like that by a background actor in a scene like this. Like, it must be done every time at exactly the same moment.
Right. And if you're going to do 10 takes, that person is going to be like, stop giving me this weird stage tofu.
One thing I noticed about this scene and in a scene that happened earlier is the survival of the plastic pour spout as a thing that's attached to the top of a liquor bottle. Like, big pour spout survives long into the future.
Yeah, and it's definitely the plastic pour spout and not the, like, fancier looking metal kind.
Yeah.
Quark he's a thrifty man.
A bartender friend of mine, when she closed up her bar, would stick golf tees into all of the spouts to stop the gradual evaporation.
Oh,
evaporation every night. Like, even though it wasn't, I mean, it had to be very negligible, the amount of evaporation that would occur, but like, that was part of the process. And it was also a great telegraph to the bar that, like, we're about to close. Like, without having to say it, it was nice.
That's fun. So Quark makes, what is it, a Sumerian sunrise?
I think it's a Sumerian sunset, which is a beverage that Deanna Troi requested.
Yeah,
Data
made it,
especially from Data, yeah.
One Sumerian sunset made in the traditional style.
I like that Quark and Data have the same beverage game.
Yeah, especially because in the TNG version, it was made very clear how difficult that cocktail was to make. And
Quark is, like, distracted when he's making it.
He's not measuring out his ingredients, and he just makes it off the counter. Like, he makes it in the glass,
right,
which is awesome.
I said I didn't drink these anymore.
Doesn't seem like it would be a very enjoyable cocktail because it's not chilled at all.
Yeah.
Not served with ice.
No.
I don't fuck with that. I don't want a room temperature drink.
I've been increasingly icing down drinks that are generally not supposed to be iced down because my preference is colder than...
As cold as it can be.
Yeah, you and I talked about this last night. Like, we got a couple premium ciders at a bodega down the way and, like, stick some ice in that glass.
Put a handful of ice in the glass. It's going to be delicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with a white wine or a rosé.
Yeah.
During this scene, like, Quark is trying very desperately to get Natima to cotton back to him, and she's quite resistant to it. And he manages to, like, convince her to shoo her students away so it can just be the two of them. But this happens just before Garak and Bashir finish up whatever they were doing, and they walk through the bar, which I guess means they must have been having lunch at the bar.
Yeah, there you go.
There would have been no reason for them to be there otherwise, unless they were having lunch in a hollow suite simulation of the Replimat, which would be, like, a real fucked up thing to do. Let's do the Replimat, but everybody but us is nude. They walk through, and Garrick's poker face game, not particularly strong.
They do that sort of thing that two spies do almost, where there's like the nod, like a doff of the cap, yeah. But there is no cap.
Yeah, tip of the fedora to you, ma'am.
Yeah.
You working? And the fact that Garrick is present, I don't think that they know who he is, but the fact that any Cardassian is present puts a big fear in,
right.
In these three shipmates, and they kind of go into panic mode. They're like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and right on the heels of this revelation is that their ship was not affected by a meteor storm. It was, in fact, attacked by other Cardassians.
Yeah, the meteor damage is, in fact, Cardassian disruptor damage, and they're making the case for leaving as soon as possible, and Sisko's like, sorry, like, O'Brien has a lot more work to do. Your ship is in really bad shape.
I think my favorite scene in this episode is this next one, where Garrick makes it clear through metaphor that Natima and her crew are in trouble, yeah. Using a fashion chord storytelling.
Yeah, like, this is a hot look right now.
Yeah.
But, like the mullet.
Certain people might even think it's objectionable. And then...
How do you get bloodstains out of a dress? I wonder.
He's doing this all to illustrate to Quark how they are thought of on Cardassia. And I thought that a particularly effective illustration was that he ripped the dress he was using as a visual aid for his metaphor.
Right.
Which, like, to Quark, like, destroying your own inventory. Like, no, no! Why are you doing this?
Quark is the guy who makes rum after hours, like, squeeze the bar rag back into some bottles.
Yeah, pour, like, the mats back out into the weld,
yeah.
Liquor. This made me wonder, like, are the things in Garrick's shop replicated, or are they made by hand and that's why they're valuable?
It's sort of like funny people who call themselves comedians, or really good cooks who call themselves chefs. Like, do you get to refer to yourself as a tailor if your clothing is replicated versus being sewn? I get the sense that, like, there's a code to Garrick.
Yeah.
And I don't think he would permit himself the title tailor.
A man's got to have a code.
Oh, no doubt.
I don't think he would allow being called a tailor if he were not a needle and thread style tailor.
Yeah. Well, as a chef comedian, I have to say I agree with that.
Yeah. And as someone who is reluctant to accept any sort of title of any kind, I have a real problem with that.
What do you think about the writing of this? Like, I was watching this scene going, like, this is a simple enough metaphor that I don't think it's going to go over anybody's head, but it's also, like, a very extended metaphor. Like, a much more extended metaphor than you normally get in television. And I bet there was some debate in the writer's room about, like, how long of a monologue they could write with this metaphor as the, like, driving force in it.
Especially because, you know, so often you see a scene like this with a lengthy metaphor that eventually gets clipped by the person they're talking to. Like, all right,
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Fashion is political belief.
Right.
And going out of fashion is getting killed.
Quark never does that to his credit, because I think he's been in the game for a long time. Like, he's all right speaking in code.
I mean, don't get it twisted. I do some dirt too, but I ain't never put my gun on nobody who wasn't in the game.
And yeah. Being spoken to in code.
Yeah, I think that these two characters, like, engage in the most subterfuge of any two characters on the show.
Yeah.
But they haven't had that many scenes together, so this is pretty fun to see them kind of go toe-to-toe.
So why'd you step up on this?
Quark is willing, at least outwardly, to sacrifice everything for Natima's safety.
Right. Like, his love seems very genuine, and they never reveal what bad thing he did to make her leave. I guess cheating, maybe?
Well, he took some of her money, or like money from the company that she worked for.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I totally missed that part.
He admits to that. And his defense is it was of an amount that was so small that like it wouldn't be missed. It was that kind of thing, like taking an extra dollar or two out of the till to go get some lunch. Like he really downplays that quite a bit, but this is a...
He set up a an Office Space and or Superman-style computer program that used rounding errors to enrich himself.
Yeah, and it didn't really the amount didn't really matter to Natima. It was
the violation of trust.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So right around this point, a Cardassian battleship pulls up to the station, and it's like weapons hot and in attack posture, and they have to like put shields up, and they're not the Cardassians aren't responding to hails, and it's one of those great Garrick entrances where they're like, what the fuck is going on? And he's like, I believe I can help you with that, Commander.
It felt very like Wesley shows up on the bridge, like out of spaceness sort of thing.
Right. And he kind of like hips Sisko to the whole situation. Like, these are wanted political dissidents. And
he kind of Guinans him, doesn't he? Like, the way Garrick is given latitude to come up to ops and ask for this kind of audience.
Yeah.
And we've been given no reason as viewers to accept the idea that he would be permitted to do that anytime he wants.
Yeah, like what happens? Do you get on that elevator and say ops and it just takes you there?
Right. I mean, even in a hotel, you need to like
tap your key card.
Yeah.
Does he have one of those honey sticks to get around the station in ways that...
If he's the spy we believe him to be, I'm sure he's got like a janitor's key ring.
You think like a week later, Sisko's like asleep at night and like sits up in bed like, how the fuck did he get up there that time?
Yeah.
We got to look into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And... You know, he's like saying, like, don't kill the messenger. I'm just passing this along. But the Cardassians are very keen to have these people back.
Mm-hmm.
And Sisko's position is like, this is a Bajoran station and they haven't committed any crime. So there's no reason for us to extradite them. Like, the Bajorans don't like you.
Yeah.
And I liked how much implied politics was taking place in this episode. Like, I don't usually love Bajoran politics or just like machinations outside the storyline in Star Trek that much. But mm-hmm. in this episode, it seemed to be really effective. The idea that like every time Sisko comes in, he's kind of giving you an update on like really like big forces that have been moving.
Yeah.
And he's not the main character of the episode, but he's important in a way that, you know, like there have been some episodes this season where it's like, does Sisko have a position on this show? Or
yeah.
Dax back to total obscurity in this episode.
Back in the pot, Dax. To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. A fucking pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my dead state. I don't use the bucket anymore. Whatever happened to that mini cloaking device, Ben?
I imagine it will come into play.
And it does in this next scene. It's Quark rolls into Natima's condo with a proposition. Like, he's giving her a way out.
Quark's goal is, I have like an ace in the hole, and if I play my cards right, I can get the girl back and also like do something good.
Yeah.
And not get in trouble from a legal standpoint.
He knows that the only way to get her to stay is to drive a wedge through her and her students.
Yeah.
And there's a confluence of things that really could make that possible, while also making him the hero that he wants to be for her to get back into her good graces.
When I travel and I like arrive at my destination, I really like to take off the clothes I've been traveling with and take a shower, clean up. Even if it's the same day, like if we're going out to dinner or something, like I don't want to be like in plain clothes, in airplane clothes, but this episode seems to all take place within like 35 minutes of them stepping off that transport, because they have not changed. They have not made any effort to like get comfortable.
No.
They're all like
you ever travel anywhere with no bags, like just for a single day, like a fly down on a fly back?
Roderick told a story recently on Roderick on the Line about leaving for San Francisco in the morning and coming back in the evening and taking nothing with him.
Yeah.
Which I found really delightful.
It seems like that sort of situation for Natima.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
maybe she doesn't want to go back to her ship because it's getting worked on.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of dust in the air, you know, yeah. It's just unpleasant.
Yeah.
but yeah, like the, you know, Quark has a hang with her two students. What are their names? Hoag and
Reckolin.
And it's almost like a parent trap style plot he's trying to hatch.
Are you trying to parent trap us? No.
She's like, right. I'll give you the cloaking device if you convince Natima to fall back in love with me. And that's the deal. Like, I don't want any money. I just want her. And they're like, how the fuck are we? She's our teacher. Like, how are we going to convince her to stay with you?
Yeah.
It sort of becomes kind of a moot point, right?
Right, because the three of them are detained by Odo not long after this, because there has been an exchange proposed between the Cardassians and the Bajorans, and we are reminded in this circumstance that the Federation occupies the Bajoran space and is subject to their law and their decisions.
Does not call the shots. Like, yeah. Quark and Natima are talking over the plan, and he's like, he's got the thermal detonator or whatever,
the cloaking device.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Those two things do very different things.
Yeah, but they look exactly the same.
Both of them will make you disappear from sensors.
Yeah.
In very different ways.
Yeah. And she's like this scene is so like lit because she actually shoots him for it, but then she feels so bad about shooting him that they get into like a Riker and Guinan level talking hot shit to each other. Yeah. Like,
you're a woman, Natima. Believe me, I know. It's not right for you to be alone.
Okay, I almost feel like Will Riker was like pulled in to write some dialogue for this scene.
I really like the phaser shot scene because it's blocked in such a way that Armin Shimerman is given the opportunity to do his own stunt because of the piece of furniture there.
Yeah.
Like, he's shot and he rolls over the tabletop onto the mat that's clearly behind.
Yeah.
But if that piece of furniture weren't there, I think they'd probably go wide and stuntman it.
Right.
Because there's no soft landing.
Yeah.
Without the furniture.
That's got to be like even more of a risk when you're working with an actor in that much loaf, because if he like knocks one of the ears off,
right,
that's like 6 hours that they have to pause to get everything back together. Like,
right.
That probably ends your day, right?
Yeah, it's got to.
But it's a good stunt, and like I love when like they hear Odo at the door, he like kicks the thermal detonator under the table. Like, what? Nobody here but us chickens. And she gets arrested, and the way Sisko explains it is the Bajoran government found a way to get a bunch of, I guess, Bajoran prisoners of war released by the Cardassians.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like a pretty high exchange rate. It's like a dozen prisoners for three Cardassians.
The attitudes involved in this entire circumstance are apologetic. When Odo comes in and detains Natima, he's sorry to be taking her.
Yeah.
And when Sisko explains the circumstance to them in the brig, he is just as apologetic.
Sisko's like, hey, I'm gonna keep trying to figure out a way to not have this go down because I don't like it at all, but my hands are tied.
Yeah.
And that made me think a lot. Like, what is the, like, does the Federation feel culpability for this, like, pretty unjust thing that will have a net effect of, like, further distancing the Cardassians from, like, the potential of being friendly with the Federation?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, not to cut to the end too much, but the one thing I thought about at the end of the episode was, like, there are Bajoran prisoners that are on a ship on their way to them that I guess they turn around halfway through. Like, how deeply disappointing is that to think you're free from prison? Yeah.
This is great. I've been rotting in that prison for 6 years. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah. Are we turning around?
What are you guys doing?
Yeah. Pretty dark.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Morn. Dear sweet. Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
I think it's interesting that unlike a Constitution class starship, you can discharge a beam weapon on the station without an alarm going off.
Yeah.
Or anything, really. I thought Odo's appearance was going to be in response to the weapons discharge, but it was not.
And there was no pile of mashed potatoes with a whisk stuck in it?
Yeah.
That's all the evidence I need to know that somebody set off a phaser, a pile of mashed potatoes with a whisk in it.
I don't know what made me think of this, but there's a moment where Quark is paranoid about Odo being around. And so he sticks his finger into a beverage and tastes it.
Yeah.
As if to know what Odo tastes like.
Gross.
Like, I would know if that's Odo.
Yeah.
And he beats his hand on a tabletop.
Yeah.
As would if that would hurt him. Yeah, I don't know.
Unclear.
But a super fun scene.
A rock fell on Odo one time, so... Yeah. Maybe it would hurt him.
Maybe.
Would that table be as susceptible to pain? What if they were just sitting there and somebody came out and was like, oh, who ordered the fajitas? And they set the super hot skillet down on it. It was like, ow! Ow!
That would be great.
They're in prison and Quark comes to Odo to make an appeal. And this scene was very interesting to me too, because it's kind of the chaotic neutral character trying to talk the lawful good character into a plan of action.
This better be important, Quark.
It is.
And it's a long dialogue scene. Like, it's, you know, when you're learning like screenwriting 101, it's like every scene is about like what, like there are two characters talking, one wants one thing.
You have to let Natima and her students go.
One wants another thing.
Do I?
It has all of like the same internal structure as an entire episode. It's like there's a conflict, rising action, and resolution within each scene, ideally. And this was a long, satisfying scene where two characters just had a conversation and agreed to free the prisoners.
I'll free them, Quark, but only in the name of justice.
These two characters are great together, for especially for the amount of time they're on screen together. These two actors are great together.
Yeah.
They're vibrating at the same frequency in a way that's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of something that I feel like they had with the TNG cast in later seasons. But this is so early. Like they just have like a great on-screen chemistry.
They seem to do these pair-offs a lot in a way that I'm not sure. Yeah, like in TNG, it took a very long time for the pair-offs to happen.
Yeah.
But there's Bashir, Garrick, Quark, and Odo very clearly. And Dax, Kira.
Yeah. And the resolution that they come to is Odo is like literally just going to like turn the force field off and like look the other way while Quark runs out of there with the three prisoners, because he knows that the prisoners are, if they get sent back to Cardassia, are just going to be put to death. And he's like, I'm about justice, and that doesn't seem like justice to me.
Justice. That was going to be my next suggestion.
What you don't get at all in this episode is the scene with Kira where she becomes the chaos agent and the negative heavy on anything Cardassian related.
My ex-boyfriend is on that prisoner transport.
Right. It feels like the conflict is so directly between two things that I was kind of missing the third element from her specifically.
Right. That's just one of those, like, there's not enough time in a 45-minute episode things, but that's what her character is there for.
Yeah.
And it does feel weird sometimes when they don't use her for that.
You get just the kiss of that up top. Like, again, like, I think what Nana Visitor does best maybe is what she does non-verbally. Like, when she tractors the ship into the station, you can tell she is really battling something inside her about how she feels upon their arrival.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, they kind of put all of our main casts women in the terracotta pots in this episode so that they can have two other women, but it's it's a love interest, you know? It's like, it's kind of the same. It's unfortunately that kind of simplistic writing for women that so much TV suffers for. And I think Dax and Kira both had interesting things to say about this situation and didn't really, you know, like, we're like, I think this could have been a two-parter, honestly.
Yeah.
It's an interesting enough premise, and getting those points of view in there would have been awesome.
Yeah, I agree. So, especially because those points of view are so strong.
Right.
I mean, there is no mealy-mouthedness about any of that. It would really add a substantial amount of conflict.
Right. And like, just in the tractor beam scene, like, you see it in Nanavizator's performance. So it's there, you know, like, she knows it's there.
Yeah.
Why don't the fucking writers know it's there?
Agreed.
So Quark is like taking him to their ship. And he's like, you know, this is kind of a garbage cloaking device, and it's probably only going to work for 15 minutes. So, like, plug it in, turn it on, leave the station, and go to warp. And
it's like the charging cable you're forced to buy at an airport from a brand you've never heard of. Like, I'm just hoping this gets me through the flight.
Like, the cable lights up?
Yeah.
Like, does that, like, make it put less power into the phone? Like, why? What the fuck? Also, why is it $40?
I would prefer if my earbuds weren't purple.
Yeah. I don't want my earbuds that I'm buying in an airport to say something about my drug use lifestyle.
I never knew Affliction made headphones.
So they get to the cargo bay or whatever where the ship is, and Quark is like, all right, guys, off you go, and opens the door, and there is Garak, who has been offered by, like, the gull that is serving aboard that attack ship that showed up, presumably. Like, they never, like, explain how this guy got aboard the station, which is another illustration of, like, how much is going on, like, at way higher levels of pay grade.
Right.
But, like, he comes into the shop and is like, hey, Garak, if you waste those political dissidents, like, maybe we can do something about the fact that you're not welcome on Cardassia anymore.
This relationship between Garak and Gul Turan is one of my favorite parts of the episode.
Yeah.
Because it's so clearly like, you finally made captain, but you're a real piece of shit, Gul Turan. Like, how did that happen? Like, the professional animosity between them is just dripping.
Yeah, yeah. They're, definitely were like two dudes up for the same promotion at some point in the past. And now, like, Turan is like partly there just to gloat.
Yeah. He's also there to ask Garak, like, so, like, do you get to call yourself a tailor even though you replicated all these suits and dresses?
Do you think of yourself as a tailor, or is that just kind of something you aspire to? Going to lord your success over a vanquished enemy is a pretty, is a move that bespeaks a certain weakness of character. So, like, Gul Turan is, like, a guy that is very fun to hate.
Yeah.
And in the final
escape, he's efficiently hateable.
Yeah.
Like, he's not in the episode very much at all.
Right. But the second he gets vaporized by Garak when he shows up at the cargo bay, it's like, yeah, fuck Turan! Like,
yeah.
Go, Garak!
Yeah, there's this moment here at the cargo bay where it's a little bit circular firing squatty. Like, they're holding up phasers at each other. You're not sure what the outcome is going to be because these sides want different things.
Yeah. This scene directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Right. Gul Turan gets vaporized and it just leaves like a pile of mashed potatoes with a whisk in it.
Gul Turan also, like, just not good at his job. When he disarms Garak, he doesn't know that notice that Garak is holding a phaser in his other hand.
Yeah.
It's not even concealed. Like, they don't
directed
even show,
by John Woo.
Yeah, they don't even show that Garak is, like, slipping it behind his back or anything.
Yeah.
It's just like, Garak had two phasers and he only handed that guy one. That guy is fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's, like, a pretty tearful goodbye between Natima and Quark. You know, it's a, this isn't your fight, Quark. I've got to go. Like, this is the most important thing.
Yeah.
But when I come back and Cardassia is a democratic society, I'm going to fuck the shit out of you.
Yeah.
You earned a real hot bang this time.
I'm going to throw you the Antifa bang of your young life. Like you mentioned earlier, the episode abruptly ends after this.
Yeah.
And there is up until now and after, so much happening. Like, Galtaran's ship is there,
right,
and it is without him, and someone's going to ask eventually what happened.
Yeah, did you guys, anybody seen Galtaran, or, you know?
There's that untied up thread. There's the thread that involves the Bajoran ship full of prisoners that evidently gets turned around. There's the escape of this ship under cloak.
This would be, there were some really cool miniature effects at the beginning of this episode. It almost, like, sets it up to be a very exciting end. And, like, for all of the back and forth about the cloaking device, like, there isn't a cloaking device. Oh, there is, and he's going to give it to them. It's like, I was so wet for that cloaking device to get used, and when it didn't, a little disappointing.
Yeah. Did you like the episode, though?
I did. I think it has flaws, but, you know, we've talked a little bit recently about how Quark is kind of a bad guy, and this recomplicates him, you know? He's definitely doing it for self-serving reasons, but he is doing something that seems, like, really good and noble in this episode, and the fact that he has a heart is something we don't get to see every time.
Yeah, because so often, I mean, I think Natima says it earlier, like, he calls him out on the emotions he's displaying as conflated with, he's conflating love and lust.
Yeah.
And we see Quark demonstrate lust quite a bit throughout the run of the show. But to see him embody sincere love is a different read for him.
Yeah.
It looks good on him.
And it plays with the trope of Odo knowing that Quark is up to something in a new fun way, where, like, the thing Quark is up to being critical to the success of the mission, like, Odo looks the other way on what is described as, like, a fairly serious crime. Like, hey, you're going to live the rest of your life in a labor camp crime. So that's pretty interesting. It's interesting to see Odo, like, make a very personal calculation about compromising on, like, the official rules.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode?
I did. You know, this episode offers up a very convenient point to turn into a two-parter, too.
Yeah.
And that it didn't was disappointing to me. But it's hard to say you don't like an episode for what it didn't give you. What this episode does give is a lot.
Yeah.
And it introduces non-combatant Cardassians who are hoping for a better future.
Because Garak, the only Cardassian we've seen in, like, the only adult Cardassian we've seen in civilian clothing so far.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see a little bit more into the political machinations of what's happening on Cardassia. It's neat to see a redemptive storyline for Quark.
Yep.
And I did really like the episode. I thought it was fun.
Well, do you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
I do really like Priority One messages. I think they're fun.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature. Goes like this. Do you want to live in a Star Trek universe? So do we. But we'd prefer to solve humanity's major societal ills without having to go through World War III first. That's why we're asking you to check out Pineal Express. It's an educational podcast that explores, through an academic lens, the serious collective action problems facing our species. You can find us wherever you normally get your podcasts, or you can go to Pineal Express, that's pineal, as in the brain's pineal gland, P-I-N-E-A-L, Express. Subscribe to Pineal Express, the podcast that isn't ready to give up on humanity's potential, or maybe it just exists to make me slip up and say Penal Express. That actually sounds like a really cool show. I want to listen to that.
Pineal?
Yeah. As in pineal gland, Adam.
pineal?
And I knew that because it's on the copy right here in front of me.
It even gives you pronunciation notes. That's helpful.
It's fairly obvious how to pronounce it. It's
I might have said pineal, but I'm an idiot.
Watch me be super wrong about how you pronounce it.
That sounds pretty great. I think if there's one thing that our own podcast has proven, it's that there's an audience for everything.
Yeah.
And you can get interested in anything.
It's like a good documentary. You don't really have to care about the subject matter to derive a lot of enjoyment out of it.
I'm down. Pineal Express.
Pineal Express.
No stops.
Yeah. We're taking the fast train to Braintown.
Ben, our second priority one message is of a personal nature. The message is from Captain DeSoto.
What?
The message is for anybody! The message goes like this. Anybody! End of message. Ben, I asked Daniel. Daniel's our great friend over at Maximum Fun who handles the priority one messages. I asked him specifically when this one was sent in, and the reason I asked was because the word captain was spelled C-A-P-T-A-I-T-N.
So you just assumed that they didn't mean to spell it that way?
Well, a couple of reasons. I think there's a vibe to this message that makes me think that maybe it was sent late at night by someone who was enjoying some beverages.
Yeah, and the word anybody is spelled with lots of N's and Y's, but there's a U in there in the middle.
Right.
Both times, which makes me think that they probably copy and pasted it from the to field to the message field.
Any you booty!
What a good message. That's the kind of message I like to receive, you know?
That's right.
That message got something for anybody.
Even you.
All right, well, if you'd like to get a priority one message read on the air by two idiots like us, you go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And it's a great way to support the show while wasting your money while drunk.
Any you buddy!
Gotta get that gold press latch.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lacquer. Get that gold press lacquer.
Platinum. Gold press lacquer. That's a lot of yammock sauce. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Shimoda. I'm glad we're doing this in person because it's a visual Shimoda.
Okay.
I didn't write down the time code, but you shouldn't need one. It's one of the very first scenes of the episode. If you scroll forward to the wide shot where Natima, Raquelin, and Hoag enter the cargo bay of Deep Space Nine, there's clearly a couple of engineers there.
Yeah.
Ready to hop in and work on the ship. One of those engineers is clearly carrying like a Stanley coffee container as if like we're going to bring engineers to meet you, but we're also going to offer some hospitality. And that guy just read to me as the hospitality guy.
There must be an Ensign Hospitality on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hotel, you know?
I don't know why my eyes just locked onto him immediately, and that Stanley Thermos as like, oh yeah, like that's got to be a big part of meeting someone in cargo.
Just watching this scene complete, it's not that guy, but the other engineer that boards the ship with O'Brien. So he's still waiting there like, would you like a refreshing beverage?
Yeah, exactly. I love that guy.
It's a good guy.
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible. Drunk
Shimoda! I did, Adam. Mine is Garrick and I guess really Andrew Robinson for a bit of business that he engages in as an actor. You know, like acting is all about making choices, and we have made some fun of Garrick's bona fides as a tailor. There's the scene where the gull shows up to taunt him and try and convince him to do all three political escapees. Starts with him like using his teeth to bite an errant thread off the shoulder of a sport coat that he's putting on a mannequin.
Yeah.
And I loved that. Like, I laughed out loud when he did it. And I just thought it was like such a real thing and such a like a non-obvious thing. Like, I cannot imagine it was written in the script like Garrick bites the coat.
Yeah.
Like, he would never write that down, but it was great. I fucking loved that.
Agreed. There are a lot of non-verbal things happening in this episode that grow characters.
Yeah. Yeah, grow them in a fun and cool way.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to see what's coming up on the next episode, Adam?
Yeah, we got to do that.
The next episode is Season 2, Episode 19, Blood Oath. Dax risks her life and her future with Starfleet to fulfill a blood oath made with three aged Klingons. Some Klingon olds going to be in this episode.
You got to believe that her life is so long that when you put a career track in jeopardy, like the consequence for that could be a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. The Netflix description is, the relative calm of Deep Space Nine is shattered by the arrival of three Klingon warriors. That really implies a totally different story.
It's like if there's an Airbnb on your street.
Yeah.
Like, here come the Klingons. How much longer do we have to deal with this shit?
Yeah. I was coming home from a work trip a week or two ago, and I was like loading my suitcases up the stairs in front of the house that I rent, and somebody just drove by and yelled out the window, "Airbnb!" And I had to admit, I kind of did look like I was checking into an Airbnb.
Yeah. that cuts pretty deep.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm a gentrifier. Not that kind of gentrifier, the other kind. Well, do you want to see if we're
You're
going to...
You're a fun arguer.
I believe we are on... Let's see. We're on the square of looking at each other during, aren't we?
Sure are. Otherwise known as square 56.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I suppose I'll roll some dice. One die to see what we're doing next, right?
I'm going to look at you during this dice roll. Make sure things are on the up and up.
We'll make some like weird significant eye contact. We don't really have much risk here, though.
Well...
I don't think we can hit anything.
The furthest we can move is to square 62, so...
This is one of the rare... Oh, 62 actually is pretty big deal, because it plunges us down to square 18.
Yeah.
So, hold on to your butts. And we hit a 5. Okay.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
So we are still at risk of hitting 62, but we moved on to square 61. Regular old episode.
We're always in a little bit of danger here, Ben.
I think we have enough time on this visit of yours to Los Angeles that the next episode, though, will also probably be a looking at each other during.
Yeah, let's double this up.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Well, that will be...
You have plenty more beer left in your fridge, and I intend to drink all of it.
Yeah, that will be our next ep. And in the meantime... If you like the show and would like to see it go forward into the future and would like to see us be able to tour more and come see you guys in person, the best way to support is by going to MaximumFun.org/donate and selecting The Greatest Generation as one of the shows you're supporting. You get some great benefits out of that in lots of bonus content that is only available to donors. And... there are other ways to support as well. You can tell a friend that you like the show and encourage them to listen.
Yeah, I mean, one way I didn't even think of until right now is like the purchase of a ticket to one of our tour stops is a great way to encourage us to keep touring.
Yeah, that's true. We've had a couple of shows sell out, and by the time this is out, we've announced a whole bunch of new dates.
Right.
So get on that. We should thank Adam Ragusea for our theme music and Dark Materia for our... original theme music, which is still a big part of the show. We should thank everybody that goes on the Facebook group and comments on Twitter and Reddit and gets the word out by joining the community. And with that,
we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. That's just too damn loud.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.